There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Don't try to pull them out, my dad said. Don't jerk the line. Just hold it steady and real. Keep the pressure up. Every year, in mid-May, we all went down to fish the bodies out of Solston Lake. There were at least 24 of us. Fishermen, hiking enthusiasts, local hunters, all kinds of outdoorsmen. Some even brought their families. Over the past 50 years, it had just become the thing that the locals do. It was horrific, but in another way, it was just business as usual. I was 14 when my dad first brought me along. There were at least 40 bodies this year. At most, there'd be twice as many, and one year there were only about 40 of them. But they always came in mid-May. That much was for sure. There was no pattern to it. Some were old, some were young, some clothed, some naked. They all emerged from the bottom of the lake, their pale backs breaking the surface tension as they floated up, always face down, eyes open, and mouth closed. There were so many bodies. You could probably run on their backs from one side of the lake to the other if you were crazy enough. The first body I ever pulled up was a pot-bellied man in his early 30s. He was balding and had a rough beard. He still had his glasses on. As I pulled him closer to shore, my dad brought out this homemade ice-pick-looking tool and smashed it into the back of the corpse, dragging it out of the lake like a wet fish.
"Gotta hook him right under the collarbone," he said. "That spot, it didn't go soft as quickly."
Dad struggled to get the body out of the water. He almost slipped on the wet rocks. With the body fully visible, the green algae stood out like veins on the pallid skin. "He's still got his glasses," I pointed out.
"Hey, look at that," Dad chuckled. "Never seen that before."
Dad took off the glasses and handed them to me. Square and thick, with a powerful frame. And yet, I couldn't take my eyes off the dead brown eyes of our catch.
"Keep 'em,"
Dad said, handing me the glasses. "Did you ever catch a live one?" I asked.
"Never," Dad said. "They all drowned long before they got here."
Shouldn't you call the police?
"You mean Officer Ken? He's right over there, kid. Hey, Ken."
He waved at a man eating a hot dog 2 fishing spots to our left. The man waved back, putting down a bottle of mustard.
"Hey now,"
my dad smiled.
"This looks scary, I get it, but it's just the way things are. We get rid of them, and that's that. Then we don't have to think about it for a whole year."
"But where do they come from? Where?"
Hey,
my dad interrupted, leaning down in front of me.
"Listen to me. No one knows them, and no one misses them. They just show up. There's no missing persons reports, and no one that comes looking. These aren't real people."
"But they look real, Dad," I said. "Really real."
"But they're not, son,"
my dad insisted.
"They're not people."
I spent at least 10 minutes just staring at the pot-bellied man. He had this neutral expression, like someone you might see passing you on the street. Not busy, not angry, not happy. Just some guy, looking at me like I was standing in front of him in a line at the supermarket. There he was, lying flat on the cold rock, his dead face staring at me. How could he not be a real person? One by one, they were pulled out of the water. Some were still floating up from the bottom. I saw Officer Ken pull out his 3rd body and drop it into a pile. The Nikki sisters already had 6, but they kinda cheated. They had 2 bodies floating near enough for them to pull up without having to reel them in. Roy pulled up the body of a naked young woman and got a stern look from his fiancé. Once most of the bodies were reeled in, we brought in a fishing boat. It trawled the lake for a few more hours, just to make sure we got them all. Meanwhile, the bodies were prepared for transport. The smaller ones, mostly kids and teens, were just bundled into bags, while larger ones were cut up. Dad showed me how to do it. All along the edge of the lake, the waters ran red. Not much, but a little. The bodies didn't bleed much. It didn't even seem like violence. There was no one screaming for help, no one begging for mercy. It was all just meat, brought up from the bottom of the Solston Lake. If this was all there was to death, it seemed almost peaceful. Ugly, but peaceful. Kinda takes the mystery out of it. I didn't get to see what happened to them afterwards. Dad told me they were all dumped at an undisclosed location, secret to all but a select few. I live in Alderland, just northeast of Aurora Falls. While I went to school in Aurora, most of my days were spent right here with my mom, dad, and three brothers. I'm the oldest, and while my brothers dreamed about traveling the world, all I wanted to do was go to prom with Danielle Jacobowitz and get tickets for the Lions Thanksgiving game. In the end, we all got what we wanted. Two of my brothers went on to study at MSU, and one went all the way to Stockholm. And for me, well, that prom date with Danielle turned into a steady relationship, and by the time we stepped into our house, we were engaged to be married. I didn't get to see the Lions game, though. Every year, I helped my dad down at Solston Lake. We aren't excited by it, but there is a special community feeling to seeing everyone pull together in a time of need. Every year, there'd be a few new people, too. Dad always taught me how we needed to make sure they felt welcome and to normalize what we were doing. We couldn't have people spreading this willy-nilly. There had to be a level of trust involved. At the very least, they shouldn't have any proof. No phones, no cameras, and no one but the most select few know where the bodies were dumped. This is the way it's been for years. I'm reaching my mid-30s now, and I have a kid of my own, Henry. Thankfully, Danielle and I decided to keep him out of this. He's always had his ambitions set on leaving, and we didn't want to burden him with this absurd ritual. Because, let's face it, this ain't normal. I know. Last year, things changed. It was just after dinner. As I was putting away the dishes, Danielle came over to me, holding out her phone. Give me a sec, I said. Just finishing up. No, she said. Now. I dried my hands and studied her expression. She was terrified. I hadn't seen her like that for years. I saw the tremble in her fingers. I took the phone. Yeah, I asked. Is it time, Ken?
They're alive.
My heart jumped up in my throat. Danielle met my eyes, sharing the urgency. They're what?
You fucking heard me,
said Officer Ken.
We need everyone, now.
What? What do we do? What do I bring?
Rifles, ammo, maybe a Bible.
There were more cars than usual down at Solston Lake. There were floodlights put up along the lakeside, and I could hear gunshots going off in the woods. The Nikki sisters were handing out reflective vests, and there was an entire crate of military flashlights cracked open. The preppers were coming out, it seemed. The fishing equipment was sticking out of every car on the road, sitting unused. I didn't have a rifle, but I'd brought a handgun. It wasn't much, but I wasn't prepared. Hell, I had to keep it in my belt. I couldn't find the holster. As I put on the reflective vest, I saw Officer Ken waving people over. My dad had been sitting this rip out for a few years on account of his bad knee, but Officer Ken was as active as ever. That night, however, he was angry. This wasn't hot dog eating Ken. This was trying not to curse Ken.
There's at least 20 people, he said. Most ran straight for the woods. Some tried to hide.
Beth, who co-ran the downtown bakery, just looked at the rest of us, throwing out her arms. I could see she hadn't brought a gun.
So, who are they? She asked. Shouldn't we talk to them?
They attacked the Smalley family, said Officer Ken. Pulled the three of them into the lake. Drowned them.
There was a collective gasp. Beth started crying as she held a hand up to her mouth.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
These things are dangerous, said Ken. We're not taking any chances. Shoot to kill.
One of the Nikki sisters offered Beth a handgun, which she reluctantly accepted.
Any questions?
So many, but none that Officer Ken could answer. We were spread out in a fan formation along the east side of the river. If anyone heard or saw anything, they were supposed to check in. For every shot fired, all who heard it has to stop and make a check call. This was a calculated seek and destroy. By the time we got started, the others had gotten at least a dozen of them. The bodies didn't look that different from what we were used to. Pale, neutral, covered in algae. Well, maybe they bled a bit more. About an hour into the search, we heard our first shot. Tony Patterson, who built sheds for a living, shot a young man twice in the neck. There was no yelp of pain, no screech, nothing. Just two loud bangs, a check call, and another body for the pile. The forest was getting dark. It's really dark. The can-barely-see-your-own-hands kind of dark. Without the flashlight I'd strapped to my shoulder, I'd be helpless. We stopped about 15 minutes later when another shot went off. We heard someone call out a false alarm, and the check call went out. I responded and waited for the search to resume.
Wait,
the voice whispered. I spun around, gun first. He was young, early 20s at most. I'd never seen this kid before, but somehow he reminded me of Henry. There was an innocence to him. He was hiding in the bushes, wearing only a pair of sweatpants. He'd been cut up pretty bad by the undergrowth, and his feet were bloody. He was panting heavily, and his eyes were wide with fear. He barely blinked. He tried to talk, but the words got caught in his shivers. This was nothing like the pot-bellied man I'd pulled out of the lake all those years ago. This was a living, breathing person. A young man. A boy, even. I started to call out, reflexively. The kid held up his arms to shield himself, an act so human it made my heart ache. I was the aggressor. This wasn't a killer. I heard the others stop. I tried to force myself to squeeze the trigger, only to feel the safety was still on. I couldn't make myself turn it off. The kid was shivering, covering his face.
I sprained my foot, I called out. You'll mind if I head back?
You okay?
Someone called back.
Yeah, I'll just meet you back at the camp.
I put my gun away and reached out to help. The kid grasped my arm clumsily and pulled himself up. He was ice cold, with black sores along his forearm. Some sort of necrosis, I suspected.
Can you walk?
I whispered.
Yeah.
He nodded.
Thanks.
I need some answers, I said. Is that clear?
Of course, yeah.
He insisted.
You got a car?
Take the path to the left, straight up for a few minutes until you reach the road. I'll pick you up.
Hurry.
I felt bad for leaving him like that, but I had no idea what I was doing at this point. I was winging it, hopefully for the best. On the way back to my car, I faked a limp. Officer Ken wished me the best, thanking me for coming out. It felt awful tricking all these people who trusted me, but I couldn't imagine that kid having anything to do with the death of the Smalley family. There were 20 people crawling out of that lake. They couldn't all be bad. Some had to be decent, and some of them had to have an idea of what was going on. We had to use this. We had to start asking questions. I got to the car, pulled around, and took the long way back. When I got to the path I'd pointed out, the kid was nowhere to be seen. As I got out of my car and turned the safety off, my first thought was that he'd made a run for it. And still, in his condition, I couldn't imagine how he'd do that. It took me a few minutes to notice him unconscious, just a few feet down the path. If I hadn't checked, I'd have mistaken him for dead. I brought him into the back seat and covered him in a blanket. I did my best to hide him, as I'd have to go by a few of the others on the way back. Pulling the car around, I noticed I wasn't alone on the road. There were 3 people blocking my path, 2 middle-aged men and a young woman. The woman held a long shard of glass like a knife dug into the palm of her skin. Their eyes were black, and their pale skin almost shone in the dark. Their veins made them look like marble, shivering statues, and still not a word, not a sound. I locked the doors and stepped on the gas. As the lock clicked, they started running for me. They were relentless, throwing themselves at the car. One of the middle-aged men got caught under the front tire, nearly making me careen off the road as his chest buckled inwards. The other man smacked against the hood and was thrown into a ditch. I couldn't see what happens to the young woman. I threw myself on the brake. The moment after the impact, I just sat there, staring into the woods. I'd nearly driven off the road, and my heart was trying to jump out of my chest with every breath. I saw one body lying still on the road. Another body, broken and battered, lay slowly dying in a nearby ditch. But the young woman was nowhere to be seen. I looked back at my passenger, who was still unconscious in the back seat, checking every mirror. I still couldn't see anything. I cursed myself and got out of the car, handgun raised and ready.
"Who are you?"
I yelled.
"What the fuck do you want from me?"
The left headlight was broken, and the right one was bloodstained, casting a pinkish light on the pine forest. It wasn't much. I forgot to bring the flashlight from camp. I slowly started rotating, looking all around, but it made me dizzy. I felt so weak, vulnerable. I double-checked to see that the safety was off. Then I saw her. She was in her early 20s, wearing a sort of black metal t-shirt and tight-fitted jeans. I couldn't even read what it said. She had this short blonde hair and little wounds all over her face. Thinking back on it now, I'm sure she once had piercings. Maybe they were ripped out.
"Just stop,"
I said.
"Stop, and just..."
As I struggled to find the words, she leapt. It wasn't just a jump. I've seen people jump, but this was no jump. Instead, she just took off, vertically, at least 7 feet into the air. It looked so effortless, like snapping your fingers. My brain didn't even have the time to register what happened. It wasn't in my repertoire of things a person was able to do. It'd be like a dog suddenly talking to you, or the sun turning blue. As she descended on me, I could hear a sound. She opened her mouth, letting the air pass through her head like a funnel. As she was about to tackle me, I heard her inhale. It was this awful, whistling noise, like an inverse scream. I could see every tooth in her mouth as her lips curled back, revealing a black tongue. As she fell on top of me, I was knocked to the ground. Her makeshift glass shiv cut my left arm, but I barely even noticed it. My body felt disconnected from me. She tried to grasp me, but I threw her off. Instead, I got back up to my feet. She rolled past me and leapt back into the sky. I knew that whistling noise would come back down on me in a moment. This time, I acted on instinct. I pulled the trigger over and over, and as her body came crashing down, she was already dead. Face down, 4 exit wounds, a big splat on the dirt road. Her face was back to neutral, like the pot-bellied man all those years ago. As I looked at her, I was still pulling the trigger. The empty gun kept clicking, rhythmically, like a metronome. The others came to check on me. They bandaged up my arm, and I celebrated loudly.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next-day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
3 kills. I was tied in first place with the Andersons. As I was sent home, they made sure to make me promise to have Danielle give me a few stitches. She'd done it before. The only thing I regret as I took off was forgetting my limp. No one said anything, but I'm sure Officer Ken took notice. He kept looking at my leg. On the drive back home, I noticed something moving in the rearview mirror. As my passenger was stirring, I stepped on the brake, turning around with my hand on my gun. I completely forgot it was empty. It just felt good to have it there. The kid just sat there, barely conscious. He wasn't even looking at me.
You got any water?
He coughed. Sure. It took me a few seconds to relax. I had a bottle in the glove compartment. Having shaken my car so much back and forth, my glove compartment just spilled out a bunch of trash. Registries, licenses, insurance papers, a few tools, even a CD or two. The car didn't even have a CD player. I handed my passenger the bottle as I started cleaning up the debris. Finally, there was a pair of glasses. It took me a while to catch on, but there was no mistake. These were the same glasses I'd gotten from the pot-bellied man. Strong frame, square, thick glasses. I'd probably brought them along once and just forgotten about them. As my passenger downed the entire water bottle, he took notice of me staring at the old pair of glasses. Sharing my interest, he tilted his head to his side.
Those, they kind of look like my dad's.
He wheezed.
Where'd you get them?
I didn't answer him. I just kept going straight, pretending not to pay too much attention to him. But in my heart, I could feel that flutter, that doubt. Just a pair of glasses, I said.
But you don't wear glasses,
the young man in the back seat said.
And those look like my dad's.
We'll talk about it later. I prayed to God that Danielle would understand. He was barely an adult, after all, and he was hypothermic. He wasn't going to survive the night. Then again, one could make the argument that he wasn't supposed to be alive at all. Most people didn't start their day crawling out of a lake. When I pulled up to the driveway, Danielle was already waiting for me. She must have been worried sick. Maybe she'd heard about what happens to the Smalley family. I glanced at my strange passenger, asked him to wait, and stepped out. Danielle didn't know where to start. Her worries boiled over into a long hug.
They called me, she said. You cut your arm?
It's fine, but I brought someone, I said. He needs help. Danielle didn't like the look of him. The kid just sat there, staring at us. Hadn't it been for his constant shivers, he would have looked downright menacing. We brought him in. Danielle wrapped him in blankets and gave him some of my spare clothes. He got plenty of fluids and fresh fruit. I suggested a warm bath, but Danielle just laughed. Apparently warming someone who's hypothermic can kill them. Who knew? As we put him in the guest room for the night, Danielle sat me down in the kitchen to stitch my arm. She could barely keep her eyes open. "This wasn't supposed to be dangerous," she said. "We can't just walk away." She tapped a finger next to my wound and shook her head. "If this had cut your throat, you'd be dead. We're not doing this again." "And that's that?" "That's that." She wrapped up my arm in a bandage and leaned her head against my chin. I could feel my wound pulsing with blood and warmth. "I don't know if I want to know," she continued. "But he's one of them, isn't he?"
"Yeah," I nodded. "I couldn't just..."
"I know. I get it. But he could be dangerous. We don't even know his name."
"It's Robert, ma'am."
Danielle and I turned. There he was, Robert, wrapped in blankets and leaning against the wall. He could barely stand, but he'd been listening.
"I'm not dangerous."
While he seemed honest, his eyes told a different story. It's hard to trust someone with eyes that reflect in the dark, like a cat. How hadn't I noticed that before? The following morning, my son, Henry, ran off to play with a friend before we got the time to introduce him to Robert. Danielle brought our guest some eggs and toast, which he chowed down eagerly. By all accounts, he just seemed like a young man who'd been through a desperate trauma. After Danielle cleaned my wounds, I went to have a serious conversation with our guest. It took me 10 minutes before I found him outside, in the car. He sat in the passenger seat, thumbing the pair of glasses I'd found. The same pair of glasses I'd found on a pot-bellied corpse as a kid, all those years ago. I sat down next to Robert, not meeting his gaze.
"He's dead, isn't he?"
he asked.
"They usually are," I nodded. "This year was the first time you weren't."
Robert examined the glasses closely.
"I thought he left us," he sighed. "I just walked out."
"Did you walk out?"
"I can't remember."
I leaned back in my seat, putting my hands on the steering wheel.
"Do you know how you got here?" I asked.
"There was a river," said Robert. "There were people, masked people. They tried to drown me."
"Good thing they didn't."
"No, I think they did,"
said Robert.
"I think I died."
We just sat there for a while. I observed Robert, trying to put into words what exactly made him so uncomfortable to look at. I realized it wasn't just one big thing. It was several little things. For one, he barely blinked. When he didn't do it simultaneously. He blinked one eye at a time, out of sync. His breathing was shallow, uneven, and with an uncomfortable rattle. It was like listening to someone in a deep sleep, only with them randomly stopping every now and then. I also noticed that he was leaving a lot of hair behind, and he had a bald spot just above his left ear.
"I can't stay here," Robert said. "I don't belong. I know that."
"None of this is right," I said. "We don't even know what's going on, and we're already killing each other."
"I think it's because, you know, people forget,"
Robert said.
You forget that we used to be people, and we kind of forget, well, the same, that we're people.
You didn't forget that, I noted. What makes you different?
I got taken just a few days ago. I still remember some of it.
He just stared ahead, then looked back at the pair of glasses. He gently put them down on the dashboard.
What about you?
He asked.
Why didn't you kill me?
I picked up the glasses and put them back in the glove compartment. It snapped shut with a satisfying click. I don't know, Robert. I shrugged. I guess I hadn't forgotten that you're still people. As I leaned back in my seat, I got a stark reminder of the pain in my shoulder. They might still be people, in one way or another, but there was nothing natural about them. No matter what, Robert was right. They didn't belong. We took a drive to a nearby supermarket. Robert looked a bit goofy wearing my leftover clothes, but if you didn't look too closely, he could pass for a slacker. We split up as I picked up a few groceries. When I circled back to Robert, I saw him drinking a bottle of mineral water straight from the cooler. He was on his third bottle.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
When I snapped him out of it with a light touch on his shoulder, he looked at me, surprised, as if he'd completely zoned out. I waved at Lucy at the counter as if to reassure her that I'd pay for it. I got it, I said. Go ahead and drink.
Thanks, sighed Robert. I don't know why.
Don't sweat it. As I paid for it, he was already cracking open a fourth bottle. I went ahead and paid Lucy for six. As we left, my heart skipped a beat. There was a patrol vehicle outside, and that could only mean one thing. Officer Ken. He was already suspicious after he noticed me faking that limp the other day. He was eyeing my car and taking mental notes, so I turned back inside the store. I pulled Robert in with me. He'll kill you, I said. That's all there is to it. He won't hesitate. Do you understand? Robert nodded. There's a second exit by the bathroom. Use it and meet me out back. Stay hidden. Not stopping to check if Robert understood, I stepped out to meet Officer Ken. Now, Ken isn't a large man. He's sort of short and stocky, if anything, but he has this intense look about him. Everything he does with purpose. And you can tell when he's losing his temper. As I stepped out of the store, he waved me over. I waved back. You all right, Ken? I asked.
How's the arm?
He asked back. Doing fine, officer. I got it stitched.
Daniel's a treasure, that's for sure. You're a lucky man.
Counting my blessings. We walked past each other when I heard him stop and turn. I could feel his eyes digging into me.
You did good, he said, getting three of them.
If only we'd got there sooner, for the Smalleys.
Yeah,
agreed Ken. For the Smalleys. I watched him walk off into the supermarket. It was only a matter of time before he would find himself small-talking Lucy, and he'd hear all about my strange, youthful passenger, the one caught chugging mineral water by the coolers. It was getting increasingly obvious that my time with Robert was on a strict deadline, and that I'd have to find a way for him to return. But to what? And where? I pulled the car around back and picked up Robert without even slowing down.
He was on his fifth bottle of mineral water by then. The skin on his arms were flaky, leaving little white dots all over the seat. "They'll be looking for you," I added. "You can't stay with us."
Where do I go? What do I...
"I don't know," I shouted. "Usually, you're all just dead. We drop you off dead, and that's it."
"Drop us off?"
I pulled over on the side of the road, screeching to a halt. I was getting worked up. Honestly, I was getting scared. There was no telling what Ken would do if he felt betrayed. "We put you in a pile," I sighed. "In trash bags. Then you're dropped off."
"That's it?"
He laughed.
"That's what you do to us?"
"Yeah, we..."
"No, wait. So you don't call anyone? You don't look for our families?"
"No one's looking for you, Robert," I snapped back.
"There's nothing out there. It's like you don't exist. How can I even tell if you're really a person?" "I'm right here,"
he yelled.
"Look at me. I'm right here."
"I'm looking, and I'm..." His eyes were all wrong. The pupils were dilating, changing shape, moving like chunks in a lava lamp. His shiver had completely stopped, along with his breathing. He was still, like a statue. His eyes the only thing moving. For a brief moment, I was starkly reminded that I was alone in a car with an anomaly. Someone who shouldn't be here. I found myself holding my breath. He might just be upset, but he could just as well pounce on me and tear my throat out. There was no way to tell.
"I'm looking," I whispered.
"What do you see?"
he asked with a rattling throat.
I don't have the slightest idea."
Robert leaned back in his seat and blinked rapidly. His eyes and breathing returned to normal, and I could feel the tension easing off. He looked at me, almost apologetically, then back at the road ahead.
"I want to see them," he said. "The rest of them."
"I don't know where they are," I sighed. "Just a few people know."
"Please," he said. "I feel like it's important for me to be with, you know, the others."
"I don't know what to tell you.
Please."
I gripped the steering wheel and bit my lip. Maybe this was for the best. Also, I still had my loaded handgun locked away in the trunk. It wasn't too hard to figure out where they'd taken the bodies. There'd been too many to be carried on foot, so they had to use a heavier vehicle. The only one who had anything remotely resembling a truck was the O'Donnells. They had a tractor. I took Robert back up the trail. It didn't take us long to find the heavy tracks of a tractor leading up into the hills. As the tracks muddied up the road and the hill was steeper than anticipated, we had to get out and walk. Robert finished his sixth and final bottle of mineral water. I brought the gun and the flashlight. It took us the better part of an hour to follow the track to its end. As the hill turned into a cave, we could see the remainder of an old mine shaft, mostly overgrown. The tracks stopped here. There was no one here, but plenty of footsteps leading deep into the earth. There had been several people here.
"In here?"
Robert asked.
"You just dropped them off like garbage?"
"It's the only place nearby where people don't come to ask too many questions," I said. "It's not pretty."
"But there were people,"
he scoffed.
"You don't even bury us? You didn't bury Dad?"
"Look, you've always just... you've been dead, and we're not... we had to do something."
"But why here? Why a dusty fucking mine in the middle of nowhere?"
I don't know.
I admit it. We just looked at each other. One of Robert's eyes was acting up again, and his breathing had slowed to a stop. I felt suddenly aware of the weight of my handgun.
I don't even know why you wanted to come here, Robert,
I continued. Nothing good can come of this.
I need to see them.
There was no arguing with him. I turned on the flashlight and headed inside. I was expecting an ungodly stink, but there was nothing but a faint whiff of salt, chalk, and stale water. Robert walked ahead of me. 30 feet in, it was darker than night. Further in, I could hear a whistling wind from below. Robert just kept walking, his eyes reflecting my flashlight. The tunnel opened up into a larger cave up ahead. This was where they dumped the bodies. We stepped out in a small plateau, about 6 feet above floor level. The entire room, almost as wide as a basketball court, was filled with trash bags. Right near the plateau, there were enough of them to make a ramp. It struck me just how many people must have been dumped here over the years. The room stretched into adjacent tunnels, also filled with trash bags. There was a side tunnel connected to the plateau that stretched further in. Robert just stopped and stared. I tried to find the right words, but there was no point. There must have been hundreds of dead, just in that room. Still, there was no smell. Why was there no smell? Robert and I moved into the adjacent chamber. It was a bit smaller, but
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
A lot deeper. There was a rickety old ladder leading into a chamber below, at least 12 feet down. In the corner, the floor had collapsed, leading into a natural cave structure.
Give me the flashlight, Robert said. I have to see what's down there.
It's just more bodies, I said. That's all you'll find there. Bodies.
No, there's... I have to.
Robert, please, I insisted. Nothing good can come of this.
They were all like me.
Robert turns to me, his eyes reflecting the light like a kaleidoscope. I could have sworn his mouth looked longer, like a snake unhinging its jaw.
They're all like me. All like me.
He approached me, pointing at me. I backed away, getting ready to turn and run.
Like me, all like me, all like...
He stopped, and his look turned downwards. He noticed my hand resting on my handgun. I hadn't even noticed that I'd grabbed it. It wasn't a conscious decision. I ran. He was too fast. He'd grabbed the gun out of my hands before I'd get a chance to fire. He was faster than me, but I had a head start. It was only a fraction of a second.
All like me. All like me.
He screamed desperately. It is difficult to describe what running for your life feels like when you feel how weak your body really is and how badly prepared you are. I felt my breath slip away as my face grew redder and redder, my legs buckling underneath. All it would take was a misplaced rock, and I'd fall flat.
Like me. All like me.
I felt something brushing against my back. I stopped, sharply, and braced myself for a tackle. As Robert slammed into me, we both fell over. I felt his hands reach for the gun. It was only now that I noticed I was gasping for air.
Robert, please. They were all...
He clawed at me, The color had run out of his face, and his eyes had turned a solid black. I could see every tooth of his mouth.
Like?
He scrambled up to his knees and came at me, arms outstretched. Lying down, I spun around, handgun facing him. This time, I remembered to turn off the safety. But was it loaded?
Me.
The shot went off, a physical reverb bouncing along the walls. I had remembered to reload after the other night. Thank God. It hit him square in the chest, tearing open a hole in my spare shirt. For a second, he just coughed and looked down at his wound, only to immediately charge me a second time. I fired two more rounds.
Just stop,
I yelled.
Control yourself, goddammit.
I got back up. He just sat there, leaning against the wall.
Like me,
he wheezed.
Oh, like me. You don't know what...
There was a second voice, and somewhere, deep in the caves, a third.
Like me,
it whispered.
And me.
A fourth, a fifth, dozens of eyes reflecting my flashlight as I backed away towards the entrance. And while Robert was growing increasingly still, there was movement deep in the caves, stirring. I turned and sprinted, gathering what little strength I had left. Back out in the light of day, I looked back at the mine shaft one last time. This was no mere dumping ground. There were things down there. I was not okay. I tripped backwards, landing flat on the wet dirt path. I just couldn't take my eyes off the mine. I saw the reflecting eyes even now. If I listened and the wind turned the other way, I could hear them.
Like me. All like me.
I must have sat there for at least 20 minutes. I can't remember at what point they turned back, but it didn't matter. I'd never been that scared in my life, and my body was still trying to figure out how to think straight. This had been all kinds of messed up, and I couldn't wrap my head around it. This is where we dropped the bodies, year after year. And now, somehow, they were waking up. Or had they been awake all along? It didn't make any sense. It never did. I heard someone clear their throat. I was up on my feet in the blink of an eye, ready to raise my handgun. I was covered in dirt, most of which had dried. I blinked away a drop of sweat, trying to focus.
Heard you had a passenger.
Officer Ken. I should have known. He'd heard about me and Roberts down at the supermarket and called my bluff.
How did you know? Marley O'Donnell saw your car parked nearby. Gave me a call, and I put two and two together.
Of course. The O'Donnells practically lived on their feet. With 8 St. Bernards, they got out a lot.
You mind putting down the gun?
Officer Ken asked. I hadn't even noticed it was up. We sat down on a large boulder, overlooking the entrance to the old mine shaft. Ken was quiet. He could tell I'd seen something. Maybe what I'd seen was punishment enough for keeping him in the dark.
I don't know what to think anymore, I said. The bodies, they've always been there, Ken. But I don't know how to deal with this. I don't even know what this is.
I've heard all kinds of stories over the years,
nodded Ken.
Most of it from drunks who try to get nasty images out of their head, one bottle at a time. But some of them stories, well, they stick with you.
So, what's that, then?
I said, pointing at the mine.
What's in there, really?
My dad told me our family had been doing this since the first Scandinavian settlers came here,
Ken said.
Down by the lake, they had a rock man during spring. When the stones around the lake kept their day's warmth all the way around until sunset, They knew the bodies would rise out of the lake. That's where the name of the lake came from. You know, Solston, Sunrock.
Ken looked back at the mine and shook his head.
They stuffed the bodies with sand and dumped them in the caves.
So, what happened when they opened the mines?
There were never any mines,
Ken chuckled.
It was always a dumping ground.
So, we're talking about hundreds of years.
More. The natives used it even further back.
Hundreds of years. Thousands of dead.
Not dead,
Ken sighed.
They're bodies, but they're not dead.
What do you mean?
They get up. It takes time, but they do. If we chop them up, the parts get up.
Wait. I looked back at the mine. I didn't understand. The numbers alone were staggering. There was no way there could be tens of thousands of bodies wandering around down there, could it? How long do the mines stretch? I asked.
Not long. Deep,
Ken said.
They're deep. Real deep. About 9 times out of 10, the bodies just wander off and disappear. Out of sight, out of mind. It's like they forgot there's an outside world.
They aren't out of sight anymore, Ken. I sighed. They're getting back up. They're getting back up. They're at the ground level. I pointed at the entrance with my handgun. Maybe 20 feet in.
No shit. None.
Ken checked it out for himself. He didn't have to go too far to see the reflecting eyes looking out at him. He recoiled. Seeing someone else get the same fear of God in their eyes as I'd had calmed me somehow. I wasn't crazy. Ken, on the other hand, was freaking out. He walked around in circles for a few minutes, grumbling and thumbing his phone. Suddenly, he stepped back to me.
We gotta do something,
he said.
We gotta get rid of them. We can't have...
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. People standing guard here forever.
What?
Those fuckers are gonna come out.
Ken spat.
When we turn our backs, we're fucked. All of us. Just look at what they did to the Smalleys.
I nodded. I didn't know if he was right or not, but the thought of Henry accidentally stumbling over this place with his friends, finding themselves face to face with those things. No. I couldn't live with that.
So, what are we gonna do? We're doing something,
Ken said.
And we need more people to do it.
Ken called in the O'Donnells and the Nicky sisters. It took them less than half an hour to get a tractor up the trail. They were armed to the teeth. Marley O'Donnell was pulling a trailer with 6 blue barrels along. It took me a few seconds to recognize them. It was the Smalley's family gasoline reserve. I still couldn't believe they were gone. I kinda got lost among the chatter. Everyone was talking to everyone. People were checking the cave entrance, untying the barrels, and loading their weapons. I got a box of handgun ammunition from Leslie Nicky, the younger sister. They were talking about taking the main corridor and about dumping the barrels down the collapsed hallway in the back. I was getting anxious. Never play with fire. I was pulled along when the crew stepped up to the mine entrance. I couldn't see any bright eyes looking back at me, so maybe whatever was in there had retreated. I didn't see Roberts either. I couldn't help but wonder if he moved or if someone had moved him. Either way, I wasn't looking forward to seeing him again. Two by two, we walked in. We left the barrels outside. We had to clear out the main corridor first. I ended up next to Leland O'Donnell, the patriarch of the family, an elderly gentleman with a soft spot for his kin. Friendly enough if you have a family of your own, but the man had no patience for anything more modern than a 56K dial-up modem. That went double for opinions.
"You know why they end up in the lake?" he whispered. "Your dad ever tell you?"
"No, they've always just been there."
"The river Styx," he smiled. "The many rivers of the world below. And there's a thing about rivers, you know. They all gotta end up somewhere."
"Like a lake," I nodded. "Or an ocean."
"So every little river's gotta bring them somewhere."
My thoughts were interrupted by a loud, reverberating bang. What surprised me the most was that my body didn't even seem to react. It was as if I was already at peak stress. There was nowhere to go from there. And yet, my ears were screaming.
"It's like there are little rivers all over the world," said Leland, raising his voice. "All the way from here to China."
"That leaves a lot of questions," I smiled. "Like, why can they jump so high? Am I going to end up in a lake somewhere someday too?"
"Clever," smiled Leland. "But you're forgetting. These people are already dead. They don't have the weight of the world weighing them down anymore. They can just drift off."
"That's surprisingly literal."
"Most laws of the old lands are literal," he smiled. "They say there are things out there who can literally eat death. To them, we're nothing but wheat. And in there, those are the husks."
"Eat death? What are you..." Another series of loud bangs, then silence. As we entered the first main hall, there were surprisingly few of them. Ken and the Nikki sisters had already dealt with 6 stragglers. Ken called up ahead for us to start rolling in the barrels. It took me and Marley O'Donnell 3 turns each to push them all in. Every few minutes, there was another shot. It seemed we had plenty of time, but I couldn't help but feel like I had to watch my feet. I had the uneasy feeling that just beneath my soles, something was moving. Something deathless and cruel. The husks that Leland O'Donnell talked about. When we'd finally rolled in all 6 barrels, the mine was still. Every step we took echoed unopposed. We were all alone, illuminating the moist walls and ripped trash bags with our flashlights.
"There's still gunpowder down there," said Leland. "A big enough fire, and we ought to close that place down for good."
We started pouring out barrel after barrel of gasoline. We left a trail all the way out to the main entrance, cleared out, and lit it up. After a few minutes, we could hear the flames further in and smell the burning plastic. We all sat down in a half circle, just staring down the mine in silence. We waited for a couple of hours. The fire just kept going. At one point, we felt something shift. Leland figured the fire had started breaking the support on the lower levels. At one point, we could feel a small explosion. The tractor shifted, making an awkward metallic creak. Around lunchtime, the supports on the first level cracked. Within minutes, we could hear the corridors collapsing. It sounded so much like thunder that I imagined I'd heard it before. When the entrance finally collapsed, the smoke was as thick as oil. We all just stood there for a moment. Leslie Nikki was the first to say out loud what we were all thinking.
"Nothing's getting out of there."
We decided we would check in later that night, just to make sure. However unlikely, we weren't going to half-ass this. If those things truly didn't die, we might just have been prolonging the inevitable.
but I figured ashes would walk a whole lot slower than legs. The rest of my day was surprisingly normal. I took a shower, set the table, and fell asleep on the couch right next to Danielle. The usual everyday ballad. When something this unnatural and impossible happens, it is so much easier to compartmentalize. It all felt like a dream. Danielle didn't even ask me about Robert. All I had to tell her was that I dealt with it. It wasn't until I crawled into bed that night that my mind caught up with me. As I lay awake, staring into the ceiling, I could almost taste the burning plastic. I could imagine Robert's glowing eyes looking down at me. There was a careful knock on the door. Before I could answer, Henry walked in. "You okay?" I whispered. Danielle was out cold. Henry nodded.
"There's smoke in the backyard," he whispered back. "I think there's a fire."
I rolled out of bed, stepping into the hallway, and checked the back window. Our backyard isn't big. We don't use it for much else but the occasional barbecue. There was an old tire swing from when Henry was younger, but that was pretty much it. The rest of the yard was just storage, and maybe someday space. But now, there was a thin pillar of smoke rising from the ground. A thought struck me. "Go wake Mom," I said. "Now." Henry nodded. His eyes went wide, and he ran. I rushed into the bathroom and turned on the faucet. As I feared, the water was black. It smelled of ashes. The caves. They were upstream from the groundwater. I put on a pair of pants and hurried out to my car. I still had the handgun stashed there. As I got it and checked my ammo, I could hear gunshots further down the street. Pillars of smoke rising high above the rooftops. At least a dozen.
"Dad?"
Henry called from the front door.
"There's someone in the backyard."
"Get your mom," I called back. "Get in the house and lock the doors. Stay away from the windows."
I rounded the corner to the backyard, ran past the grill, and noticed the same reflecting eyes I'd been dreading all day. Henry was right. There was someone in the backyard. One of them was just standing there, next to a smoking hole in the ground. Before we moved in, there had been a well on the property, but it had been filled in over a decade ago. That hadn't stopped the man standing in my backyard, though. For a few seconds, we just looked at one another, his eyes reflecting the light from the kitchen. I could barely see any details about him. He was slightly taller than me.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
And had a strangely shaped head. But that was pretty much all I could tell. As he stepped closer, I raised my handgun.
"Just go back down," I said. "Just turn back."
"Can't go back,"
he wheezed.
Can't go.
The ground was discolored with every step he took. Danielle's tulips had turned blue, and the grass had started to wilt. I took aim.
"Can't,"
he repeated.
"I can't."
"Please," I pleaded. "Just, please." With an effortless movement, he leapt into the air. I'd seen it before. 6 feet straight up, almost weightless. It looked so easy. Someone without the weight of the world, as Leland had said. I could see it now.
"Can't,"
the voice whispered as he came crashing down. I stepped aside as the body fell haplessly onto my grill, knocking it over and spilling charcoal over the cobblestone. I snapped out of my indecisiveness. The world came rushing back to me as I raised my handgun. Only now did I recognize the man on the ground. It was the same pot-bellied man I'd seen my dad pull out of the lake almost 20 years ago. The same pale skin, sunken eyes, and thinning hair. To me, decades had passed, but this dead man was still the same. And now he was writhing on the ground, trying to regain his balance. He grunted with effort, his body stained with streaks of black.
"Can't go,"
he wheezed, trying to get back up.
"Can't."
I shot him 6 times and ran. I didn't even stop to check if I got him. I just had to go. The next few minutes are a blur. Danielle and Henry had hidden in the closet. I got in through the bathroom window, which they'd forgotten to lock. They were screaming. I screamed back. We had to get to the car. We had to go. We had to act. Danielle didn't understand. Henry was scared. My instincts forced me into a single-minded drive to protect my family and leave. I had nothing but pants on when we got in the car. I felt strange stepping on the gas with no shoes on. I almost ran someone over as we pulled out of the driveway, breaking the speed limit as we passed by our neighbors. Someone was shooting. Someone else was screaming. Glass was breaking. Danielle was yelling at Henry to put on his seatbelt. She kept repeating it, trying to force him to listen. It felt like such a mundane thing to do, like brushing your hair while your room is on fire. Still, Henry did. I did as well. Danielle was just about to, when we clipped the edge of a car backing out of a side road. Collision. For a split second, it was all quiet. The silence grew louder until it felt like a blanket over my mind. My hands were numb, but I reached for Henry. I touched his knee, trying to see if he was okay. Danielle lay unconscious, her right arm broken in several places. Somehow, the car was still running. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I heard Henry call out to me. I saw him point. There were people outside.
Don't worry.
I coughed.
Just lock the doors.
I stepped out in a daze, not even noticing I'd left my handgun behind. There were hundreds of them. They were marching up and down the streets, a mob on a midnight stroll. They were climbing in through windows, ripping open car doors, dragging people out into the street. 7 of them had gathered around me. 2 kids, 1 elderly woman, and 4 adults. I couldn't focus on their faces. I was pretty sure I had a concussion. Still, I couldn't help but notice how they never blinked. The reflection in their eyes never ceased, like stars.
"No,"
I sighed.
"Just not like this. Not you. I didn't even.
One of them circled around me, stepping up on the hood of the car. It seemed partially interested in Danielle. I snapped at it.
"Get the fuck away,"
I screamed.
Get away from her."
I took a step too quickly and tripped over my own feet, falling shoulder first onto the pavement. The world was spinning. The stars above seemed to move in strange patterns, aligning into constellations I'd never seen before. Then, Roberts appeared. He might have been there all along, or just popped up out of thin air. It was impossible to tell. I was completely out of it. I fumbled with my hand, my fingertips brushing against his cold cheek. He was real. He was there.
"I know where to go,"
he said.
"I'm the only one who remembers."
"Where? Where will you?"
"Thank you,"
he said,
"for bringing me home."
I killed you. I shot you.
Yes.
He nodded.
You did.
Someone ripped open the driver's side door. Henry was screaming. I'd never heard him scream like that before. I tried to protest. I fumbled with my arms, but I was powerless. I saw them pushing themselves into the car. I heard Henry struggle against the seatbelt. More glass breaking. Had I forgotten the child locks? I screamed. I screamed until my throat was hoarse. I felt cold hands holding me down, covering my mouth. Hand after hand after hand covering my face until the world went dark. It smelled like dirt, like water, ashes. The last thing I remember from that night was the hands letting me go. I rolled onto my stomach. I saw them wandering down the road in unison. Then, as effortless as ever, they ascended. Dead bodies lifted vertically into a night sky full of impossible constellations. Puppets pulled up to join the puppeteer, their unceasing eyes reflecting the stars. Roberts and his dad, side by side. The man got his glasses back. That night, the moon shone black. I can't explain it. It just did. The next morning, I didn't know what to do. The car was empty. Entire seats had been ripped out and left in the middle of the street. Further down the road, I found the bodies of the Nicky sisters. They'd had a last stand by the supermarket. The O'Donnells were just gone. Same with Officer Ken. It took me hours to even get my head in the space to call for help. People drove up from Aurora Falls. I was bandaged, and I remember someone asking questions I couldn't answer. After that, it was just a circus. I have to write this down. I have to put these words to paper. Someone has to know that what they're saying just isn't true. I was given my life as a thanks, not as a result of some crazy happenstance. They said it was an accident. Some fracking caused a massive natural gas leak. 12 dead, 19 missing. Except people don't fucking shoot at gas leaks. It doesn't pull people out of their cars. And I swear, there were a lot more bodies than 12. Just look at the pictures. The holes in the ground are still smoking to this day. You could see the wilting grass and the unnaturally blue flowers. Even in the newspapers, on Google fucking Maps, it's all there. I still see them, sometimes. I can feel them. I look up at the sky, and I know that some of those stars are just eyes looking back down. One day, they will come for us. And when that happens, there will be no pretty words or cover-ups to change the fact that those cold hands will grasp us and bring us all down the river of the dead. One day, I'll awake on the shores of the Solston Lake, having left all the weight of the world behind. And they'll be there. We'll laugh, carefree and weightless. You'll see. You'll all fucking see.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.